Welcome back to episode 172 of Tall Boy Radio. And as we always say, who knows where it goes when the beer flows. Okay, we said it for the first time last week, but it might just catch on. Now, folks, bad news. No guests for you this week, but it was planned that way. It's okay. And we've got something just a little bit better for you. So, let's get started and let's say hello to one of the other three hosts who are joining us tonight. Andy.
Can I get a oh yeah? Oh yeah.
How's it going, dude?
Yeah, good. The beard's coming along now. I'm trying to get it down to my nipples. It's nearly there.
It's important to have goals. So, tell the folks what you've been up to. It's been 9 months or so since you've been on the podcast. I get regular messages saying, when's Andy coming back? True story, I do.
Yeah, I asked my mum to send you them. I've just been doing random bits, I think. I was trying to think of, like, I've had a weird few months where I think because of COVID and all that, and I've not been playing football or basketball, and I've struggled with, like, not struggled, but I've not been doing a lot of running or anything like that. So I think my head's just wobbled over the last year, but we're back in the gym. We're carrying a little heavy child around now. So, yeah. And I'm drinking more. I think that's a secret.
Trust me, in my experience, it is. So let's say hello to...
building work going on and stuff.
You have had a lot of building work going on. You're having your annex built for what I can only assume is a podcast studio.
Or a spider den.
Let's say hello to Gazza as well, dude. The man who's been here quite regularly over the last 9 months. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Evening all, evening the world. Looking forward to this. It's absolutely fantastic to have Andy back with us. As I say most weeks, I'm not exactly sure where this episode's going to go, what we're going to talk about, but no doubt we'll have some fun along the way. So, yeah, looking forward to where we're going with this one.
Indeed, indeed. And we've said this is the era of the four hosts. This is our first time with four hosts on the podcast. Dave.
Evening all. And Andy, it was me sending all those messages wanting Andy back, because as soon as you're back, I can stop coming.
It's not how it works.
Damn. No, it's good. So, it's good to have you back, Andy. You've been missed.
He has been missed. So tonight then, so what we're going to do, we're going to do something a little bit different for Tall Boy Radio. Every now and then we do episodes without guests and we ask ourselves some random questions. So this episode, if you've clicked on it, God bless you. You're in for a treat. Zen cones for the modern times or something like that. I forget what I actually called it, but that's the general principle. Do any of you guys know what a Zen cone is?
Something that makes you ponder.
It is. So if you're a Zen Buddhist, it's something you meditate on. So something to really get you thinking and really become tranquil and let those thoughts process through your mind. Something I think Tall Boy Radio is known for. Now,
doesn't sound very comfy. Because a Zen cone is something you meditate on.
Cone is spelt a little bit differently to C-O-N-E. It's K-O-A-N. So it's a Japanese phrase, I believe. Yeah. So the most common one, you'll know is the sound, you know, what's the sound of one hand clapping? Or if a tree falls in the woods, does anybody hear it? Yeah? Unfortunately, science has kind of answered that question. So I think we need some cones for a modern age, yeah? Just out of interest, if a tree falls in the woods, does anybody hear it?
Depends if you're standing next to it.
If there's nobody there, does anybody does it make a sound?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it?
No.
Yeah, it does.
No. No, it doesn't. Not to humans, because it needs your eardrums to vibrate.
That wasn't the question though, was it?
It is the question.
Not a sound that humans can hear necessarily, but I bet it makes a sound.
No.
But I said, does anybody hear it? No, I don't think a bird isn't anybody, is it?
No, exactly.
Well,
Let's not get stuck on semantics too early on.
You asked the question, dude.
But no, Dave's 100% right, because it's, you know, back then, the notion of sound wasn't really understood, but Dave's hit it right on the head there. You know, when it falls, it doesn't make a sound at all. It makes a vibration. The sound occurs here when it hits our eardrum. So it does require somebody to be there to hear it. And that's a thought. So that's the kind of level of thought process I need you guys to apply.
Well, without. The question.
Screwed.
Question number one. And again, just remember, there's no right answers. So there's no... Oh, there might be some of them. But so question number one. Should the moon landings be considered an alien invasion?
Yes.
Well, to be fair, I don't really want to go down the were the moon landings ever actually real in the first place, because that's a whole new different podcast. Yes. So, and I think we've probably done that one already at some point. So, you know, I'm still not convinced it actually happened, but there we go. That's a different matter. Yeah, probably, yeah.
Well, let's just take... Now let's just take your point though, because like you know we're gonna ponder this point then. Yeah. So if they weren't real and they didn't genuinely happen, then no, they can't be considered an invasion.
But taking what the common person would suggest has happened, which is we actually did go to the moon, then I would probably argue that yes, it would should be and seen as an alien invasion.
Do you believe we landed on the moon?
I thought I did, but I'm not 100% convinced, I'll be honest with you.
Why?
I just think there's too... Maybe it's just a conspiracy theorist in me. I just think there's too many anomalies, too many what-ifs, too many, well, if we did, why have we not explored it further? Why have we never been to the dark side of the moon? Why don't we know what's there? Why, in this common age, can we not have technology that allows us to see the dark side of the moon? Why do we not have the technology? We're going to Mars, for Christ's sake. So why can we not go to the moon and explore the moon a little bit further, a little bit deeper? So I just think there's too many not-so-sure questions out there.
Go on, Andy, you said no as well. And what was it? Well, you know, you said yes, it was. Do you believe that we landed, the man landed on the moon?
I don't know. I've always thought... Yeah, we probably did, but then as the willy waving contest of I've got a space rocket, no one's gone back there really, have they? They go to the space station and all that, but not back to the moon. If I was Musk, I know he's trying to get his rockets to be reusable and take off and land and all that, but I'd go to the moon first. At least it's a couple of days job, isn't it?
I just think until you can absolutely
put it all to bed.
Yeah, that's the thing, is put it to bed. I think until you're absolutely effectively right off the moon in terms of resources, in terms of anything that you've got, in terms of, things that we can exploit while we're exploring elsewhere. Because at some point, and I know it's thousands, maybe hundreds of years in the future, thousands of years in the future, the Earth is going to run out of resources. So if the human race is to continue, we are going to have to explore elsewhere. So why not just explore the nearest satellite that you've got closest to you, which is the moon, isn't it?
Could the reason be why we've never been back that there is absolutely no benefit to doing it in terms of it is
but how
just...
How do you know that? Because you've only been to half of it and you haven't explored the other half of it.
Well, actually, I'm just Googling that. But the U2 to lunar...
There could have been a fuck-off great big alien race that said, don't come back, otherwise we're going to kick your head in. I was going to say something a lot more profound then, and then I'm just going to kick your head in.
Yeah. I think it might be the first time I've used that phrase on Talk
Weird. Sorry, go on, Dave.
I say the Chinese sent a lunar rover called U2-2 to the far side of the moon. So we have been there, and the satellite photographs of it, and of course we landed on it. I know it's not an alien invasion. To be an alien invasion, there'd have to be somebody living there for us to invade it, or it'd have to belong to somebody else, which we, to the best of our knowledge, it doesn't.
Well, that's the thing, to the best of our knowledge.
Well, therefore we can't be an invasion.
But how do you know that somebody hasn't been there previous to us and claimed it, and therefore it is an alien invasion?
Well, they should have left a flag if they're going to do that.
you mean a flag just like when we went and they shoved the flag up that actually was fluttering in the wind even though there's no wind on the moon? That sort of flag, and even though the flag's lit in two different places from two different light sources, even though there's no light source on the moon, that sort of flag that only emphasised the American stars and stripes, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And things, and flags. Do you know that flags will move on the moon? You do know that, don't you?
Yeah, I know flags will move on the moon. Yeah. Why do they move if they're on the moon?
Because somebody's just stuck it in the ground, picked it up with the hand, stepped back and taken a photo.
Yeah, but what would happen is if you stuck the flag in, if there's no wind, the flag would just drop to bottom, it wouldn't unfurl. So why is a photo of it in the flagpole with the flag unfurled and you can see the stars and stripes? Because it would just, if there's no wind, it would just drop and it wouldn't unfurl.
Yeah, gravity's so low, so it's long.
There's no gravity on
the moon,
though. Yeah, exactly. So
no, there is, there is, there is,
well,
there is gravity.
There is gravity, but not, but it's not.
If there's no gravity,
there's no gravity, so there is some.
Yeah, I know, but there's so little gravity that the flag doesn't drop to the pole straight away.
Oh, okay. So there's some mystical, magical, what, you know, starched it or something in the spaceship, so they stick it in, it's just stuck out at the side.
No, they just held it, stepped back and took a photo.
Oh,
not complicated.
Okay.
My invasion thought was the microbes and shit like that, because you're technically from another planet. You're sort of invading their whatever germs they've got, aren't you? And introducing the flu and all that rubbish that we did to the Americas or whatever.
That's it, yeah. We gave the moon COVID. True story.
It's in isolation, that's why we're not going back there.
I think we went to the moon, though. I think when we went there, I'm pretty sure we were in airtight suits, so we weren't exactly going to spread the flu.
What was on the outside of it, though? You can't put a suit on without handling it, in my experience.
It'd have been killed by the near zero gravity. Short sight works.
Might be the lack of atmosphere than the gravity, I would imagine. But here's a question: while we're still on the moon, though, just turning things around a little bit. One of the four of us here has seen the moon very differently. The moon.
Wow, that's a completely different question.
Yeah, exactly.
I have no idea what that place is.
I'll cut you out and put it in. I won't. I'm too lazy to edit it. One of the four of us here has seen the moon from a very unique viewpoint. Who's that?
It's not me.
That isn't you.
Andy?
It's not Andy.
Beans on the shrooms.
it's not me, it's Gaz.
Go on, explain it. How or why?
You've seen it. Exactly, you've seen it upside down, dude.
Okay. I have been to the Southern Hemisphere, yes.
Yeah. Did you notice? Did you think anything of it, or were you too pissed while you were there?
Well, I was 17, so obviously I didn't drink. and I don't remember it, honestly. I don't remember looking up and going, oh, yeah, that's upside down. But no, it's an interesting concept. What I did notice was, strangely enough, is when you fill the sink with water, it goes down the opposite way. I was like, oh, I remember that. So that's a bit weird.
Does it actually?
Yeah, does it?
It's only because of the way they make them.
Is that right? Is that what they do? They put like some little knurls or whatever, it's just to funnel the water the wrong way.
It's not the wrong way, is it? You say in Australia,
well,
it's wrong.
Well,
it is.
If ours is the right way.
I might just change this episode from Zenko's to bickering.
Tall Boy Radio bickers.
Again.
So when we get the feedback, it's like, have those four on again together?
Yeah. Go on.
Andy, look what you've done.
Yeah.
Sounds like you've all been drinking like a few hours before I've joined.
Yeah, you'd have thought, but...
Beer episode.
I haven't.
I'm still on like half a bottle. That's it, half a bottle down.
That's it, indeed. So let's move it on there. So we've not really put that one to bed, but the whole point is to think about it and not necessarily answer these questions. So let's move on to something a little bit more upbeat. So how would your loved ones get justice for your murder?
Oh, okay. Lovely thoughts.
What was that, sorry?
Insurance checks.
No, it's an interesting one. It's a question really about retribution, is what we're saying here. And the reason why I've picked ourselves is because, God willing, we're all alive and will be so when this episode goes out as well. And I mean that genuinely. But I don't want to pick a specific case where there's nuances to it. It's just that question of retribution. How do you get justice when your life has been taken? What reparation can be made?
I don't think there's any, really. And when I listen to people that go on for years and years and decades to get justice for something like this, I do hope that I'm not like that, because that burning desire to get that retribution or to get that justice can just consume you, and whatever life you have left can just disappear. And I'm not saying I'm going to go all sort of, you know, religious, because I'm not, but I think, and forgiveness is probably not the right word either, but just forget it and move on, you know, because you're not going to bring them back.
What if the murder was an injustice? So if I throw out Stephen Lawrence or whatever, so they've campaigned for years to get, you know, what about things like that? So if somebody's murder was an injustice and, or a social injustice or whatever it may be, why would you not fight for? And you're not going to bring them back, but why would you not fight to raise awareness so that somebody else doesn't feel as though they have to go through the same thing as you, or et cetera, et cetera?
I think the cases like Stephen Lawrence, that's a bit different in the sense that that's a bigger thing. That's not just about the individual that killed him.
No, but to the family, it's there. So the question was, how do you get, so I say, was it retribution? Is that what you were saying? But so you would continue to, and is it retribution? You'd want their killers brought to justice, and in the process of doing that, raise awareness of whatever it was, whether hate crime or whatever it may be. So, I don't know.
It's a good example, that one, guys. And I get what you're saying. It's part of the reason why I didn't pick a specific case, obviously, because I don't want anything to get said that could be misinterpreted. But my thought is there, not necessarily with that one, but like you say, if it is, you know, if your one time the ending was the victim of a hate crime, you know, someone took an issue with James Wade and mistaking you for him or something. What? You know, would campaigning and making a change in the law ultimately, and I don't want to sound horrible at you, would it make any difference to your loved ones at the end of the day?
I don't know. I don't know. Well, maybe is it a sense of justice? That I don't know. I'm trying to think if it's the other way around, and if it was, you know, if it's somebody that I, you know, cared for, loved or whatever, that had been murdered, you know, would I campaign to the point where I would want to see? I don't know. It's a tough question, dude. Because I get your point. It might become then all encompassing, and actually, what benefit is it? I don't know. It's a tough question, that one.
It is a tough question. You know, when I think about it, I always think about one of our most popular episodes, obviously, in the last 6 months, is the one we did about the Malcott murders. Andy, I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to that one, but it was a murder that took place about 32, 33 years ago. And the guy has not been caught, but I got a number of messages after that episode. Well, I've not shared, okay, of people saying that actually pretty much... I'm not going to say everybody, but it's a widely believed fact is probably the best way of putting it, that this individual who did it is now living in Spain and is known to the wider population of the local area of Malcorp. And if it's true, I find that utterly, utterly disappointing that not one person who knows that information has stood up and said, look, the finger at this guy, you know what I mean? And that's what I think about that. That when I hear about that, and their family not getting the answer as to what happened. That's the worst case scenario, isn't it? That nobody knows you did it. You know,
I think there's a slight maybe, and I don't know. Obviously, I'm not in that situation, but maybe there's a slight difference between knowing who's done it and wanting to bring them to justice, and then not knowing who it is, if that makes sense, and not having any closure because you don't know who's been responsible. You don't know who it is. I don't know. I think it's slightly different.
Does anyone want to say anything before we move on? Because I don't want to dwell too much to bring the mood down, but I did think it was an interesting question. Does anyone have any final thoughts they want to chuck out on that one? Well, we're going to move on from the difficult topic of murder to something even more complex and a deep, dark undergrowth. Caterpillars, when they make that chrysalis, do they know that they're going to turn into butterflies?
What do you mean by no? I mean... it's an insect.
Well, it is an insect. I'll give you that. I believe it to be an insect. Or it certainly turns into a butterfly.
I'll say no.
I don't think they're capable of that kind of thought process.
Well, think about bees and the way that they can communicate. Just because they're tiny things with tiny brains, you know, often we elect people under that sort of basis. But because they're tiny things with tiny brains, who's to say what they know, don't know, and understand and don't understand?
Well, that is true. they may be thinking, one day I'm going to be a beautiful butterfly with purple wings with pink spots. I can't wait for it.
Maybe they are. Maybe they are. I'm not, you know, I don't want to go down the old hungry caterpillar route. You know what I mean? What, don't you think that's something I think in terms of Zen cones is worth pondering, is trying to understand the understandable like that. And if it doesn't understand that it's going to be a butterfly, then what's it doing?
It's just existing, isn't it? Isn't it just a natural metamorphosis, though? Is it just something that happens to them and they're not necessarily consciously aware of that it's happening or it's going to happen?
So let's apply that logic. If we apply that logic, okay, could we apply that logic to ourselves, that we are merely existing until we transform ourselves into what we can be? And whether we knowingly do it or just exist is the difference.
Exist until we die, I suppose.
Well, I wanted to get away from that day.
We have probably more control over our destiny than a caterpillar does over its. I mean, it's either going to eat some leaves, go into a chrysalis and turn to a butterfly, or it's going to get eaten, or it's just going to die. It's really not got many other options, has it?
Not many life choices there.
No.
Whereas we do have quite a few choices.
I agree, we're less likely to be eaten by starlings, but it's the same principle when you apply, isn't it? Are we just existing? We just following the formula that's set out for us, and then we move along till we, like you say, we shuffle off this mortal coil, or do we define our own destiny in the same way that actually that caterpillar chooses to metamorphosis into something beautiful? As long as it's not eaten by a blue tit.
But if they chose to, does the fact that you said chose to mean that some have the choice not to?
Well, that's it. I don't know. Do they?
I suspect they don't have that choice.
But what I can't get made out of is what are they doing? You know what I mean? On that one specific point in their time, that's what they choose to do, form into a chrysalis.
But do they choose to? Or is that, I don't think they're, it's sentient, even the right word, conscious or sentient, whatever it is. They don't choose to do that, do they? That's just a physiological change in their structure.
I don't know. Do we know enough about it to say otherwise?
I suspect we probably do.
Do we?
But you can get Mr. Attenborough on if you can find him and he can tell us all about it, but... I think we know enough to know that it's a physiological and biological change that they go through, that they don't have the choice in doing so. Because if you're talking about choice, as I said, that would suggest that they then have the choice not to. Mm. And I don't think that happens. So therefore, it's no choice at all, is it?
No, I guess if in that case it is no choice, but do they know? Do they know that's what they're doing? Do they know what the end goal is? Or are we just assuming that one day in their life, the risk of sounding like Michael Jackson, they wrap themselves up into a chrysalis, not like he did on occasions when he was putting himself on his oxygen tent, and then transfer him into a beautiful butterfly, unlike Michael Jackson.
I'm not so sure they know, dude, I'll be honest with you.
Andy, you got any thoughts on this one?
You know, like, we always try and apply like the human brain to other species, so like they don't have the same sort of conscious level that we're aware of, but a lot of, like, you get a lot of birds flying south for winter or whatever it is, and maybe it's just like that, where the caterpillar knows something's happening, it knows to eat X amount of food and then go to a place, and that's then it just pops out of its little cocoon and away it goes. Maybe it's like that, it's like an instinctual thing of just doing something. You know what I mean? I don't think a lot of insects think. I think they just do.
Well, I hope you're wrong. I'd like to think there's some choice. There's some decision. There's some knowledge of forethought. I don't know. I'd like to think they know. But, you know, if not, then that's a disastrous state, isn't it, really, to be in that? And is it the same brain that exists? Is it the same thought process? The thing that was crawling along and eating leaves is now flying around and getting swatted by fly swatters.
Yeah, I'm not sure, dude. I think you're fighting to lose a battle there, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I think I am. I'll move on. A nice easy one, then. Nice easy one for you. Dave, you were exceptional at maths at school, if I remember correctly, when we got kicked off A-level maths roughly the same day. And so did we, and by we, I don't mean the four of us or the two of us, did we invent maths or did we discover it?
We discovered math. We just spoke about what was around us and wrote that down and put things together. It was already there.
Yeah, I think so. I'd probably agree with you, Dave, there. I think it was there. We interpreted it in a specific way, and you know, gravity was always there. It was only when the apple fell on that dude's fucking head that he decided to write it down and start exploring it, didn't he? You know what I mean? It's like, so it's always there. It's, you know.
So when the apple tried to kick Sir Isaac Newton's head in, is that what
he's having no.
But here's a question, though. When we think about 2 + 2 = 4, okay, and we think about the human language. Now, bear in mind, wherever you are in the world, that language is developed in a way that the people there have learned to understand. So, in the Spanish region, they speak Spanish. Over here, we speak English. And let's not work out too much. We're spending too much time thinking about the derivatives and where they've come from. But we've made up those numbers. We've made up the fact that 2 means 2 things, 1, 2. You know, that wasn't existence. That wasn't a thought that existed. It was there in nature before we put a number to it. And the fact that you get 2 of the 2 things and makes 4, that is in its own way a human invention. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I'm not so sure, because if you take that analogy further back to Neanderthal man, when he's feeding his kids and he's picking berries and he's got, you know, a handful of berries and he's going, you know, 5 for you, 5 for you, 5 for you. You know, he's not doing maths, is he? He's just doing what's in front of him. And we've later on gone, oh, let's call those berries 5. And if you put those berries with those berries, that's 10. We haven't invented the maths. We've just put words to the situation.
I suspect we might have created maths to try to create some order as such, and try to create a unilateral way of expressing things that we see, maybe. A bit like a language, because, you know, some people say that maths is a language and stuff. So, you know, you, I don't know. I suspect that all of the things that we attribute the use of maths to has always been there. And we've just created a system. I don't know.
How important is maths to you on a daily basis?
Well, I tell the kids at school it's massively important. Most things that you do is maths orientated. You sent a message earlier saying 14 minutes till we go. That's numbers, that's maths, that's time. Do you know what I mean? I could say, well, that's 12 minutes to go, 11 minutes to go. That's a counting system, that's maths. So I think possibly without realizing it, you probably use maths all the time, most days.
We'll get to time later. I've got a question on time for you. Don't you worry about that. Okay. What about yourself, Dave? How important is maths to you, do you believe? And what's your understanding of it?
My understanding of maths is pretty poor, despite what you said earlier. No, it's vital to what I do, because, you know, where I work, everything's based on computers and the internet. You know, without maths, you just can't have computers. You can't have the internet. You can't have an accounts department to pay your expenses. You know, pretty vital stuff.
How? Sorry, go on, Andy. Did you want to say something there, pal?
I was just chuckling.
Fair point. So how have we got to this stage? How have we, as human beings that were once monkeys, got into this position that we have that deeper grasp of mathematics that we can figure out how Dave's accounts department works? Don't tell him you can't figure it out, Dave. Now is not the time.
Nothing.
I just think, but to use the, you know, you go back to the primates, you go back to the monkeys, the chimps, the orangutan, and that order, you know, they're our closest living relatives as such. They use maths. They will count. They will say, one, as Dave said, go back to the end of the man. They'll say, that's yours. There's one for you, one for me, one for you, sort of thing. And they will use that. They will use division. They will create a, they'll grab a bunch of bananas off a tree and they will divide that up amongst the people, the monkeys in their family that need it, sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? So they will, they just don't use the word divide.
Mm. Well, how have we got to where we are in the level of complex mathematics that the human brain can or can't understand or has a computer to understand for us? We have to develop that computer. We have to develop the software that does that, which is, again, all using maths, all using these binary equations. We know that. And now we're taking it on to the next level using AI. How on earth have we got to that level if indeed at one point we were dividing out bananas amongst our hairy friends?
That's just Tall Boy Radio Party on a Saturday night, isn't
it? It's pretty mind-boggling, really, to think of how we've advanced so much just in the last 40, 50 years, never mind the last several thousand years, and the dependencies we have on it and the way the world is just underpinned by it. It's quite scary, really.
Well, funnily enough, Gaz and I were having a conversation just a month or two ago, maybe. I think we're just on our way out for a beer. And I was saying to him, there's a couple of us in this room here now having a very special birthday this year. And 50 years ago, 1973 was happening. And like I said, we've come a long way since then. Well, you take that back to that. 50 years before 1973, it was 1923. So think about that now. We're as far away from 1973 as 1923 was from us when we were born. Is that scary?
Frightening.
It's a different world, that's for sure.
Absolutely frightening. And you know, you go through the maths analogy in terms of how much we've progressed, and I don't profess to know even half the percent of what is out there, but you start talking about quantum mechanics and nuclear physicists and space-time continuums, and I know we're going to, you know, that's sort of the realms of science, but maths underpins that, because, you know, so we talked about going to the moon earlier, so you talk about velocities and trajectories, and that's maths.
Mm.
And you talk about force, and you talk about speed and acceleration and inertia and all of those things to continue the space analogy. That's maths. And there's fundamental equations, calculations to go to. But that's always been there. We've just attributed names to each of those things.
And Ad, if we survive to 75... you'd be able to say we're as far from birth as the 1800s.
Gee whiz.
Wow.
There you go. There's a thought for you, isn't it? That's a sobering thought.
That is a sobering thought, yeah.
So maths obviously was invented by God, yeah? Because it was there for us to discover, yeah? Is that right?
Absolutely.
Is that right? Oh, good, right. We've got that one established. Tick that one off. Tick that one off.
Ten commandments.
That's it. Well, they always say Moses was the first man to use a tablet to download something from the cloud, don't they?
Hey.
Was he Moses? Was he Moses? Yeah, it was Moses. Let's give him credit for where credit's due. So, but talking about that then, I've listened to Brian Cox talking passionately about the importance of astronomy, not astrology. I don't want to confuse those two.
Just as a side point.
Go on.
He did that little tour, didn't he? I'd have loved to have gone to see him, because I bet he's proper engaged. I bet that's like proper, like, enjoying. There's enjoyment to be had in terms of going to see him. I'd proper like that.
You should put that quote on his tour poster. That would get everybody else to come see
him. No, but seriously, because like, he's pretty engaging, isn't he? And he's probably the guy at the moment that, you know, just younger generation, oh, that guy's cool, and he's obviously, you know, he's IQ slightly higher than probably ours combined, but, you know, he's really engaging. To go and listen to him talk about it and try and put it in layman's terms would be pretty cool, I think.
Oh yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. But when I've heard him talk, and I've talked about the Big Bang Theory and that, and this is my next question, how can we be certain? And I mean, that's the four of us. And Andy on this one, chime in when you're ready, dude. Let us know what your thoughts are on this next one. How can we be certain that God didn't create the Big Bang and that's how the world was created and everything else around it?
You can't. Because then you say, all right, let's say God did. Well, who created God? Oh, well, you know, and you just go on and on and on. And if you try to think about what came before the Big Bang, you just do it until your head hurts and then you give up.
But was there anything before the Big Bang?
I've thought about it and it hurt my head.
God. Well, what if God was there? Maybe not God as we know it, because religion is a thing that we can either buy into and buy into not. And it asks for belief because there's no facts to support it, whereas in terms of astronomy and science, we know that there are. But how do we know? How do we know that that isn't how it happened? That isn't how on the seventh day when he had a nap. The previous 6 days was what he was doing, was creating the Big Bang.
You can't know, can you? You've just got to have faith that he doesn't exist.
It's an interesting way of putting it, though. But it's faith either way, isn't it?
It is. You're just believing in something one way or another. And, you know, if you can't disprove it, you can't disprove he does exist any more than you can disprove he doesn't.
Tell you what, Dave, that's a good line, that is. And it's an interesting point as well. I never thought we'd get that philosophical tonight on Tall Boy Radio. Andy, what are your thoughts on this one?
I always resort to what I believe is the definitive answer to most things. It's Futurama. There's an episode on there where I think they go forward in time, and then the episode goes on and they go further and further and further, and the world like ends, the universe ends because of, I can't remember what it was, like stars dying out or something like that, and then a big bang happens again and it just keeps going around like a circle. And you know, who knows what it is? Like, scientists to say, oh yeah, this is fact, and then like 2 years later it's not, it's the opposite.
Well, that's interesting, though. You're 100% right. That is our understanding of it now. But our understanding of it 100 years ago is entirely different to where it is now. So maybe 100 years from now, we'll be a little bit more enlightened and we'll know a very, very different truth. Is that not feasible? I know Gaz has just said, let there be light, and look what's happened.
You're right. As if on cue.
Don't you think that we have to be a little bit more open-minded, or do we have to accept what Brian tells us and says, no, religion is bunkum and it's not to be bought?
No, because I think 100 years ago, if you tried to explain what Brian Cox had explained to us, to the people 100 years ago, they'd have gone, no, don't believe it, what a crock of shit. So I think you have to be relatively open-minded enough to think that in another 100 years, somebody could come along and say, well, actually, what that Professor Brian Cox said 100 years ago was a crock of shit. And do you know what I mean? So I think you have to appreciate that things move on and different thought processes occur and different evidence is presented. I don't know.
That's a very good point. You know, when he's saying things could only get better, was he right?
It was almost as if he was in a dream. I'm here all week.
Here we go. Something far more important now than the beginning of time. Far more important than God. Far more important than the existence of Jesus and baby Jesus, Moses, beer. And everything. Beer. No.
Yeah.
Oh. More important than beer.
Never.
Not really. Why doesn't glue stick to the inside of the tube?
Nah, probably needs to react to air.
So when you open it up, the air hits it.
Only hits the bit you're squirting out.
Are you on about?
I can't get more philosophical about that, I'm afraid.
I was waiting for the innuendo then. None of it.
I know, I set you up perfectly. No, seriously, you're on about like pritch stick, you're on about like liquid glue.
Any glue you care to, you know, whether it's got a sticky end or not otherwise.
I suspect it is a reaction to air or oxygen or something which makes the molecules affect differently.
It's a nice easy one then, moving on from my glue question. What would a room full of mirrors look like if there was nothing inside it?
at each other. Oh, no.
Floor to ceiling as well.
Floor to ceiling. Ceiling to floor. Wall, wall to wall.
Like a sphere on the inside.
Empty.
A mirrored sphere.
Will it?
Mm-hmm. What about the reflection, though, Gaz?
Reflection of what?
Exactly.
You said it was empty.
Yeah, there's nothing in there to reflect upon. There's nothing to reflect within those mirrors.
A mirror is only a reflection of there's nothing in the mirror. A mirror is only a reflection. And if there's therefore nothing to reflect, it would be empty. Yep.
It's got the other mirror.
No, but a mirror reflects and isn't. So therefore, if it's floor to ceiling, wall to wall, it would just be empty.
Yeah, but wouldn't you see the mirror on the other side? You'd reflect the mirror on the other side, wouldn't you, Gaz?
No, because...
But there is a mirror on the other side, so why wouldn't you see
it? Are you assuming that there's a frame of the mirror, and therefore the frame...
No, just a mirror.
Yeah, so you wouldn't see it, would you?
But is it invisible? You say it's invisible?
No, so what would it reflect then? So what would be in the room then?
You'd see the mirror.
But the mirror is reflecting against the mirror where there's nothing in between it. So what would that look like? What I'm asking you is, what does nothing look like?
I know what you're asking. Just trying to wind Gaz up.
I think it was working.
Good point. It's a bit like the tree, isn't it? And hearing the falling tree. You'd have to stick your head in to be able to see it. And by then, there's something in there to see yourself.
It's a little bit like Schrodinger's cat, isn't it?
I don't know who he is, or his cat.
Is that the same as Pavlov's dogs?
No. Pavlov fed his dogs and rang a bell every time he was feeding them. So every time he rung his bell, the dogs would salivate.
Yeah? Correct.
Whereas Schrodinger was a little less cruel. There was no feeding going on.
I don't know more cruel, not feeding.
He's starving his cats.
Yeah. That's the principle behind it. I don't know whether he actually did it or whether he just theorized about it. So he put a cat inside a box and sealed it, yeah? Now, you know, after 20 days of that cat being in there, that the cat is dead, yeah? But it was alive the last time you saw it. So you do not know whether that cat is both alive and dead based on the two theories and the two pieces of knowledge you have. And you don't know until you look inside the box.
Okay.
Schrodinger's cat. It's quite a famous one, isn't it?
So what's the point there?
Well, the point is, if you have to understand what nothing looks like by looking inside the box with the mirrors inside it, which shows nothing in its entirety because it's reflecting of its own reflections, and that is nothing. The only way you can know what nothing looks like is to look inside and see a reflection of yourself.
In which case,
yeah, no, I agree with nothing. That. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's deep. It's a deep one, that is.
So nothing can't exist, basically.
Well, that's the question. This is the thing. This is a Zen cone, Dave. It gets us to meditate, gets us to think, gets us to vocalize our inner thoughts and emotions.
Go on, guys, tell us, what does nothing look like? Describe it.
The inside of a room that's completely made of mirrors.
What does it look like, though, that nothingness?
Well, I don't know. I'd have to shove my head in the room and find out.
But it looks like James Wade.
inside my mind at the moment.
Who's James Wade?
This is the last player who looks like Gaz. A more rotund version of Gaz, as Gaz will kindly point out.
Thank you very much for that.
Andy, any thoughts on this one before I ask a deeply important question about time?
No.
Right then. So we talked about beer. We talked about nothing is more important than beer. In this country, how old do you have to be to buy beer? This is the 18. Simple part. There's no trick question. 18. You have to be 18 to legally buy beer to consume for yourself. Does it make sense to base the right on which you can buy beer, vote, have sex, to make decisions about your gender? Does it make sense to base that on the amount of times that you've stood on a rock that circulates a burning ball of gas?
You have to have some arbitrary way of setting these rules. And the earth rotating the sun is one way of counting the amount of time that's passed, time being something we also created, or did we?
Well, that's we defined how it's measured. Mm. Time exists in its non-measurable state in terms of things change. So that's time, isn't it? Things change. We get older. The fruit spoils. Arsenal throw away two-goal leads, etc., etc., etc. That happens over time. But in terms of defining it, we choose to do that by the fact that we're stood on the Earth and it passes round the sun once every 365 days, which we have defined so many hours, so many minutes, so many seconds, so many nanoseconds. We've defined all that, and yet we base these things. That is the time that you can do it, not the time that you're sensible enough to do it. You have passed around the Earth, or you've been passed around the sun, sorry, 18 times while stood on this rock around a ball of gas. Well done, son. Get yourself a 4-pack of special brew.
I had this conversation with Albert the other day. Actually, he was talking about going to the gym with one of his mates, and one of his mates is 13, Albert's 14, and you have to be 14 to be able to go and use the gym equipment. Well, there's no supervision. And he said, well, why is that fair? Because his mate was like eminently sensible. Would not be. I said, it's just a rule. You just have to have a rule. You have to have a line in the sand, because you just got to. Otherwise, you'd left to judge every single person by their own merits and having to make a judgment on each individual for every single event that is currently based on age. Can you drive a car? Well, we'll have to look at that. We'll have to judge you as an individual. Can you buy beer? Well, let's look at that individual. Can you join the army? Can you get married? All of those things. And if you had to judge every single person, which is an objective view, every single time, well, nothing'd ever get done, would it?
Well, that's an interesting way of putting it. But it's an unusual way of measuring things when you break it down into its base right, don't you think?
It's all we have, though, isn't it?
It is all we have. And don't we set a lot of precedence by, you know, being work for 9, you can go home at 5:30. Don't have your lunch before 1:30. You know, that kind of stuff. For the love of God, he said you'd meet me at the pub at 8:00. You've been here since 6:30, guys. Well done. But don't you think it's weird when you break it down into its bare bones?
Yeah, but I think Dave's right. And as much as you have to have some form of unilateral law or rule that defines what you can and what you can't do.
Neanderthals probably didn't, did they? No. Early man. They just probably did what they want when they want.
They probably based it a little bit, and when the sun comes up, that's the day, you know, that's when the day starts. You know, people start behaving differently, or, you know, if they're diurnal or nocturnal, you know, they behave differently on the basis of where the sun is around us. It's quite unusual, isn't it, when you think about it?
I don't know. It's all we know, isn't it?
So. It is all we know. That in itself is weird. That is all we know. There's a great ball of flaming gas up in the sky, and we define our very routine about its position or where we are positioned around it.
But has that come from, and I don't know, at some point, it would not be back in the day, you have to be 18 to buy beer. So is the basis of our laws based on experiences previously when that law didn't exist, and therefore you create the law because that's the norm? I don't know. You know, back in the 1200s or whatever, there was no age limit to when you could have a beer. Do you know what I mean? So you have to choose a moment in time where you say, right, you know, we're going to create or we're going to make a law, a rule or whatever it may be, in order that people have to sort of abide by that, because you need order. And I think that's the other thing, because I think if you didn't have laws and boundaries and guidelines and this, you wouldn't have order. And that's something that I think the human race sort of craves in a way. I do think we crave order.
We do, but sometimes do you ever wonder if it's that definition, that order that we've created, actually creates the people who are willing to go against it?
Oh, sure, yeah, because you will always get people who will kick back against it. However, I think we have to have order, otherwise we would have anarchy, and therefore everybody would just do whatever they chose whenever they wanted and do whatever they wanted to do to whoever they wanted to do it, and that would create a very uncomfortable existence. And I think that's why we have certain laws, boundaries, this, that and the other.
Any thoughts, Andy?
Well, I was thinking then, it's, you know, like measurement is done on, there's a weight, I can't remember if it's in like Fort Knox or somewhere, where this is bang on like a kilogram, and they base a lot of measurements off that. So it's a constant, and that's what supposedly the Earth going around the sun is constantly the same. So, you know, basing age on that is something that affects everyone. So it's probably the easiest way of doing something, isn't it, really? You can't say, oh, well, you can drink alcohol when you're 6 foot plus, or weigh this amount, or, you know what I mean? So I think it's just the easiest thing to base it on.
Do you know what? I'd have gone for 6 foot plus, John, and I'd been able to drink a lot sooner.
It would be easier, but yeah.
It's an interesting one. I do think it's interesting when you break things down into the basics, that actually sometimes they can seem very silly and quite farcical, but that is all we have.
Yeah. I just don't think about stuff like that.
Slip past your eyes, fine.
Well, that's it. Right then. We'll just chuck out maybe two last questions before we go. Who knows? We might even have time for a third. Guys, you love sport, don't you, dude?
Love sport, yeah.
Horse racing?
Don't mind it.
How much difference does a jockey make to the horse winning the race?
Massive? Massive, huge difference.
Do we set those horses going by themselves?
Funny, dude. Put you on a horse, it ain't fucking winning anything, I'm telling you for a fact.
No, yeah. That's true.
Unless it's not a fucking Captain Old Cat.
You trying to say a fact?
No, you couldn't stay on it. And the fact that the jockey has to stay on the horse until the end of the race. So you have to have certain level of aptitude and ability.
But if we let them dogies go by themselves, like they're doing greyhounds.
Yeah.
Why can't we do that?
Well, you could. It's just
why don't we?
Because that sport hasn't been invented yet.
But do you think the jockeys make a huge difference?
Yeah.
Huge difference, yeah.
Yeah.
What about you two guys?
I think of it like Formula One racing, where the driver has an impact, but he's not the deciding factor. Like, you get the faster cars and stuff. But they do... Like, yeah, if you're going to go to the extremes of saying, like, you know, a jockey over 5 foot, yeah, that's going to be different to the usual jockey height.
I think jockeys, you know, a lot of them are sort of short and stuff. There's quite a few jockeys over 6 foot, but the Formula One analogy is quite a good one, because you can have, you know, you can have not necessarily the best car, but you can have the best driver, and that counteracts the fact that somebody else might have, you know, the best car, but the driver isn't quite as good because his skills are not quite as good. So I do think when you marry up the best horse and the best jockey, you're likely to win the race. If you marry up the best Formula One car and the best driver, you're likely to win the race. I think it makes a huge difference. I think you put novice jockeys on a horse and it doesn't win as many times as if you put one of the top jockeys on the horse. And that's why the top jockeys are earning vast amounts of money, because they can get the best out of the horse, the same as the best drivers can get the best out of the car or the best out of whatever it may be.
Have you ever heard of a gentleman by the name of Frank Hayes?
I'll say no.
Well, he won a race at Belmont Park in New York on the 4th of June, 1923, Frank Hayes did. What was quite unique about him?
It was his first ever horse race.
No.
Got no legs.
No, he had legs.
Got no arms.
He had arms.
He's blind.
First professional jockey.
No, he was dead.
And he was strapped onto the horse, was he?
He was on the horse. He had a massive heart failure. No, he wasn't dead when he put him on the horse. Christ almighty, that's extreme. How's Frank? Bad news, I'm afraid. Fuck it, get him on. Tie his hands on the bastard.
Nobody will know.
Got to tell Bob on him.
If, yeah, any relatives of Frank Hayes are listening, I apologise. I do apologise for that. But it had to be said. No, he had a massive heart attack, the fella did, and in the last stage of the race, and was dead when he crossed the line.
Okay. Yeah, just shows. I mean, basically, as long as the jockey's competent enough to stay on the horse, it's all down to the horse.
Is that the case? Do you know what I mean? Is that not the case?
No, there's when you watch horse racing, there's loads of intricacies in terms of and to coin a horse racing phrase. So when you deliver the horse, or when is it that you want them to kick? When is it you don't want them to kick? Position in the race, where do you want them to be? Near the rail? Do you want them to be in cover? Do you want them to be out wide? It's understanding the horse. Some horses like lots of cover. In other words, there's lots of horses around them. Some like to be wide, where there's no other horses around. You know, it's about understanding, and the best jockeys understand that and therefore are able to perform better. You know, owners and trainers, well, more trainers really, they will say, but this horse needs to be delivered late, so don't overexert them early, but you've got that finishing burst of speed, a bit like a 800 1500 meter runner that just sits in the pack and then down the final straight delivers his run. It's exactly the same. You know the capabilities of that horse, and you know how that horse reacts, and therefore, as a jockey, you are in the best position in order to be able to complete that.
We can still die. We can still die and win.
I think it's the horse, and the horses are, you know, making sure they pick the best jockeys. The horses are making all the decisions, and just letting the jockeys think that they are. They're still going to do what they want and run where they want.
Interesting thing. Interesting thing. Right then, one final question, because we're up round about the hour mark. Dead quick answer to this one then, guys. Is the answer to this question no?
Yes.
No.
So no. Yes. So you're saying yes it is no, or no it is yes?
I'm saying no and no.
I'm saying it's not a question.
Was it even a question?
Ooh, is it a question?
No, it's a statement.
Was that a question?
It is a question if the answer is no. Wait, what? No, finally, what we need to ask is, does anybody have any questions that they would like to ask?
What does wind smell like?
Depends if you're downwind of someone. Yeah,
are you asking us what your wind smells like?
Not what my wind smells like, because that's horrendous. But what does wind smell like?
Does wind smell?
There's yeah, does wind question. Smell? Yeah. Mm.
We know yours does.
And I don't know if it's going to be the human wind, obviously, but does it, don't it?
Just carries the scents of other things, doesn't it? Like rain and grass and flowers or whatever. And ass.
Gas.
Dave's dumb question. It wasn't dumb, was it? What was it that we said? Dave, strange question.
I can't remember. You've used that before. I can't remember what you said.
Yeah.
No idea.
Do you have a question for us, Dave? That was my way of setting you up. I did a little bit of echo with that for you. I'm playing around with my tool.
No, I'm afraid I need more thinking time than that. Sorry.
Andy?
No. Time for a beer, though. Statement.
Yeah, there's a statement. What? So something we haven't done really much, very much recently, but we'll do it seeing as Andy's on. What other guys been drinking tonight then? Dave, we'll start with you first, dude. Let's get your non-alcoholic tat out of the way.
Left, zero. Sorry, left zero. Disappointing.
If you have to pick a zero, it's one of the better ones. Andy?
I started off with half a glass of whiskey. I've been topping it up with Coke. That's been going.
He needed it.
Good times.
Good times indeed. Gazza?
Well, I started off with Huygon. I haven't had that for ages, so it was in celebration of Andy's return to the podcast. So I haven't had that for a while. And then I finished it off with an Urban Fog, which is one of my sort of current favourite beers. Absolutely delightful, that is. So yeah,
Indeed. And what I tell you, I've been drinking in celebration of us being able to disprove the existence of God, but simultaneously not been able to prove his existence either. I've been drinking Northern Monk and Surplus for Repurposes Wasted, which is a hot cross bun pale ale. So it's the principle behind it. So many hot cross buns are wasted each year in our supermarkets. So Northern Monk, with the help of Surplus for Purpose, have repurposed those hot cross buns and made them into a beer, which I have to say does taste hot cross buns. And I thought I was going to hate it when we first started off. I actually really, really enjoyed it. It's only 5%. It was a little bit weaker than stuff I'd normally drink. I don't normally drink a pale ale, but I've got to say, this is one of the better pale ales I've ever had. So before we round up and say our goodbyes, let me give a quick shout out to our sponsors, Ollie's Snacks. If you want your olives, your nuts, your pretzels, or your chocolate-covered pretzels, head over to ollies-ollies.com. With every order placed on the website, they donate a school meal to a child in need with the help of One Feeds Two. But more importantly than that, if you use the promo code TALLBOYRADIO, all capitals, all one word, and you're based in the UK, you will get 20% off your order. You can't say fairer than that. So, guys, who wants to go first? Have we enjoyed this episode? Feel free to say you haven't.
No, enjoyed it. It's always nice when Andy's back, and it's like getting the band back together, isn't it? It's like a blast from the past. They enjoyed it. I love your random quiz stroke, question stroke, philosophical thoughts, Ad. It's not hugely mind taxing, but it's a nice little escape from guests on our podcast, which we thoroughly enjoy. But it's also nice just to chew the fat amongst the lads. I really enjoyed it.
Good, 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 good. Well, we're going to do something similar again next week. So there's no guest again next week. We'll spoil that one for you now. But we're going to be looking at some of the knowledge from social media that you can gain. So what can you learn from social media is what we have next week. So that's something to ponder upon for next time. Dave, you enjoyed this one?
And Gaz says it's not too difficult to think, but it depends on how hard you think about it. I mean, if you think about, try to think about what comes before the Big Bang and what's outside of the Big Bang, that can hurt your head. And if you try to think of what nothing looks like, then that can hurt your head as well. I mean, if you think about, can a caterpillar, does a caterpillar choose to turn to a butterfly? That's not too difficult.
I don't think we satisfactorily answered that one.
It's a biological thing. Gaz told you that right at the start. It just happens. But no, I think it's...
Was that what we were talking about there?
But no, it's good to, as Gaz says, just chew the fat, mull over some different things, put a bit of thinking into some things, set the world to rights.
Indeed, indeed. Andy, you've been good to be back, or just reminded you why you haven't done it for the last 9 months?
Yeah, see you all next year. I didn't know what to expect. Yeah, I didn't think my grey matter would be used tonight. So yeah, cheers.
Always a pleasure. There's less thinking involved next week, I can promise you that. We're just going to be looking at some of the wisdom that's shared via social media, whether indeed it can be called wisdom. So who wants to say their goodbyes first?
Yeah, brilliant. Loved it. Looking forward to next week. You've already said, sort of gives it a little bit of a tease as to what the premise is. So yeah, we'll look forward to that. No doubt we'll have some fun along the way, and we'll find out where that episode goes when we get to the end of it. Looking forward to it already.
Indeed. Who knows where it goes when the beer flows. Dave?
Yeah, looking forward to it. And I know Andy loves his social media and the influences it has on things. So I reckon Andy's going to be speaking up a bit if he's joining us next week. Are you joining us next week, Andy?
Yeah, and I'll be having some pre-drinks, I think, as well.
Good lad.
I hope you don't go quiet when you have some drinks, though.
Oh, yeah. I fall asleep. And he's back.
He's back. Well, I'll tell you one thing we need to do, because before the next time we record, one of the three of us here turns 50. So we need to wish Dave a very happy birthday for next week. By the time this episode drops in a couple of weeks' time, it already will have been your birthday. And by the time we record next week, you will be the elder statesman of our group.
I already am the eldest. That's how time works, mate.
It does. But currently there's three of us who are 49. You will be the only one who's in your sixth decade.
Yeah, cheers for that, mate. I mean, technically, you are as well. I mean, you were alive before the day you were born.
Oh, now we've got a philosophical argument starting. Yeah, I agree with you.
I was going to say, or were you? But yeah, obviously you were.
I was. I believe I was. So on that bombshell, we will wish you all a good night, and I hope you'll all join me. We will share a post on our Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter wishing Dave a happy birthday, and I hope you all chime in and add your comments to it. If you want to find those social medias, oh, that was a seamless link, wasn't it, just, eh? You can find us at Tallboy Radio on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, at Tallboy Radio Podcast on Instagram, and please head over to tallboyradio.com, drop us an email at mail@tallboyradio.com, or even leave us a voice message. We've heard that that can be done when we listen to last week's episode. So all I will say is thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Bye!